Welcome to the Loop Marketing Podcast. I'm your host, Elise, Director of Marketing at Kwegi. Today, you'll be hearing an excerpt from one of our recent webinars covering the metaverse, NFTs, and crypto, and how marketers can prepare. Let's get started.
By way of introduction, my name is Ryan Green. I'm the VP of Marketing at Kwegi. Thank you, everybody, for attending our webinar on everything with the metaverse, NFTs, crypto. Really excited to have a great panel here with us. I'm coming here to you today from Orlando. I'm at the ANA conference. Metaverse was a big topic of discussion, even with the Mark Pritchards and the P&Gs and Verizons and Visas of the world. So you're not the only ones that don't know and are trying to figure this out. And we're going to, you know, as brands and marketers and agency folks, we're going to figure this out together with the help of the illustrious panel that we have. We have Stephanie Lynch with us today, who's the head of marketing and CMO at Waxman. They're an agency that focuses specifically on cryptocurrency, blockchain, and decentralized finance. She has worked in the industry for 15 years at Fleshman Hillard, Build-A-Bear, and at Brighton before joining Waxman. So thank you for joining us today. We also have Hugh Naylor, who also works at Waxman. He is a former journalist for the Washington Post and the National. He speaks three languages fluently, and now he leads the Waxman agency's thought leadership on everything with Web 3.0. So Hugh, thank you for joining us today. We have Joe Cox. He is the founder and creator of the Pop Marketer podcast, creative veteran. He's worked for Red Bull, Coca-Cola, was a VP at Barclay in Kansas City before launching his own consultancy, and obviously the host of the Pop Marketer podcast. Thanks for joining us, Joe.
Thank you.
And last but not least, Matt Prosperi from Kwegi. He's one of our account strategy directors. He has 8 years of industry experience, most recently at Go Local Interactive, becoming one of our very first account strategy directors at Kwegi. He's our in-house expert for all things crypto and Web 3.0. So thanks for joining us, Matt.
Good to be here. You know,
this is such a broad topic and so much that we want to cover today. So let's get right into it. So, to set the stage, could each of you kind of give a 30-second synopsis of what you think the metaverse is and NFTs and the connection with blockchain, and just some definitions to ground everybody in this discussion. I'll start with you, Matt.
Sure. Yeah, I think that from a practical application as marketers, they all are connected because it is emerging technology. And with that, to get into the space may take a little more effort than in other worlds that we may operate in, but it also just takes a little more research. But with that comes a lot of potential. So I see it as an initial high wall, but after that, there's lots of potential to really engage with a new audience who's looking for new information. So from a practical standpoint, that's kind of how I see the potential in the space that we operate within, both in the metaverse world and also on the cryptocurrency side, really being connected by blockchain.
Yeah, blockchain is definitely a centralized point of this. Stephanie, how do you look at defining things like the metaverse and NFTs and decentralized finance? What language do you use?
Well, I'm going to try to break it down simply because I don't know how much the audience knows, right? And there's so much, there's a lot of terminology in the blockchain space, but I think that there are some basic things. And Hugh, if you want to riff on what I'm talking about, please chime in. That you have to think about the blockchain first, I think, before we dig into NFTs and the metaverse. And the blockchain technology gives people the power to drive economies with no middle layer. And that is conceptually sometimes very difficult to hold on to, but fundamentally the blockchain is just a ledger of transactions that can't be changed. Anyone can invest in a project, aka a company, or assets like NFTs, cryptocurrency, all of the tokens that you've heard of, like Dogecoin, through this ledger system. And the excitement around the assets is that it doesn't take a lot of expertise to invest, and you don't need to go through a centralized exchange to participate. And so basically, you don't need a broker. and however you think of when you think of broker. And the metaverse is largely built on this blockchain infrastructure. You can kind of think about the metaverse is like a railroad. And so if the metaverse is the railroad, then the NFT is the train car. And so the NFTs are useful within this metaverse environment as stores of value. So the NFT can be a ticket to a concert held in the metaverse. And I use that in air quotes because I think we're going to dig into that a little bit later. And then the NFT could also be an agreement between you and another user that buys the NFT, so that every time the NFT is sold, you get receive a royalty, or even maybe a dividend from that NFT if it's part of a larger collection of NFTs. Mm-hmm. And so I think that it's good for people to understand when you think conceptually of this blockchain ledger system, that there is some additional functionality that can come into play with blockchain, and that you can think about it as if this transaction happens on the blockchain, then another transaction can occur through what's called a smart contract. And so again, there's a lot of terminology around this, but really just think about it as it's a lot of transactions happening automatically with some additional security features. And since we as marketers and communicators work with brands that are transacting all the time, it's interesting to think about how to add some additional value to those transactions. And so, and long story short, that's how I think about it.
Yeah, it's an interesting metaphor, I think, with the railroads and the train itself. Joe, is that how you think about these terms as well? Is that a good analogy for kind of conceptualizing what we're going to be talking about today?
I'll use trains for any metaphor. Like, that sounds fantastic. I'm just a fan in general. I mean, yeah, when I talk to people about and audiences about metaverse, so I too try to like break it down, because to me it's really not, it's a word, okay? So, and it's caught up steam, right? And we're trying to wrap our arms around a lot of different things when we put this word into existence, right? Like, and it came from a sci-fi book, of course, but the metaverse is only our way of like trying to wrap our arms around this idea of a further integration of our real lives, or of our physical lives and our digital lives, and especially over the pandemic. But trust me, this is not a pandemic. Like, because of the pandemic, this is all happening. Not true.
I've heard a lot of that today, so thank you for sparing us.
It's a fast forward button, sure, but it is not. It's not. This is all progressing the way it has been progressing, and it's pretty easy for me to understand this idea of as I spend more time on my digital world. Meaning, hi, everybody, we're on screens right now in front of an audience. Like, I'm spending more and more time in that digital world. Of course, I want to bring more cool things from my physical life into that digital space. I want it to feel more like my physical world, because there's some cool, nifty things that helps me communicate as a human being. It helps me connect. And then on vice versa, there's some really cool things about my digital life that I just wish I had inside of my physical world. Just go out in the real world now. All the things of not getting exactly the products you want, or not, or having to wait, or not getting the kind of experience that you're used to in your digital world, don't you wish you could have those over? So it's really just this intersection and integration of those two lives. It is an interface, right? Like, if think of it as, it's just the internet. We're not talking about something completely new. It sits on top of the internet, and it's a new interface to look on, to look at everything at, to experience the internet with. It's not TikTok, you know, it's not the next TikTok. It's much larger concept to that, but I'm geeked about it. Can't wait to talk more about it.
Hugh, do you think that it should be defined as the metaverse, as that intersection between your digital and physical world, the way that Joe described as well? Or do you think about it in different terms? I know, coming from more of the blockchain and crypto side, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, it's really hard to define, right? Because I think we know that, as everyone said on this call,
more of our interactions and transactions in daily life is getting digitized. And as that gets digitized, we immerse ourselves into this digital world or worlds. There could be more than one metaverse, right? To the point where, you know, the vast majority of those human interactions and transactions occur within this digital world, but in which our lives and ourselves become so absorbed into it. I mean, almost living through VR, you know, kind of not to go to Elon Musk, but, you know, he made the point, I think, on Joe Rogan's podcast that, like, we're already kind of on the path to going, like, cyborg, right? Because we have our phones on us and, like, we're constantly in this digital world now. But this is, like, the next step, I think, to immerse ourselves almost fully, right? And I think Joe mentioned, you know, a reference to, was it Snow Crash? You know, it's this idea of, I mean, it's a dystopian novel, I think, from the 90s where, you know, we all enter a metaverse, but in this case, it's like a metaverse in which there's like government control, it's like surveillance state, whatever, right? Which brings the next question is like, okay, so the metaverse is this digital universe that we are effectively like transplanting ourselves into as humans, but how is that world going to operate? Will that world be controlled by Facebook and Microsoft? In which they set the rules of the game, they can change the rules of the game whimsically, or will it run on this like Web3, whatever you want to call it, blockchain crypto rails, right? And, you know, I think there's tension between sort of the web, you know, Web 2.0 space, like Facebook, Microsoft, yep, et cetera, and the crypto people, because if, you know, the crypto people fear that like a metaverse that's run by Microsoft, Facebook, et cetera. I don't want to like single them out, but I'm just using them as
those are the easiest ones to point to.
They control the system, whereas, and I'll be short here, crypto and blockchains are essentially just communities of people who use computers to coordinate a rules-based order across vast geographic differences, distances in real time, so that all decisions are made according to consensus. And so in that sense, it's more like democratic. And so the crypto people want, you know, they want a world in which no single company or government can control this metaverse. And so they want these blockchain protocols to run them instead. That's
certainly the friction, I think, right now. You know, I think you hit it right on the head. The Web 2.0 people, maybe the ones that are writing articles in the Wall Street Journal saying that NFTs are a Ponzi scheme, for instance, have an investment into still being able to keep control, whereas the Web 3.0 and the you know, decentralization, democratization of transactions and of currency, you know, have quite a bit of a different viewpoint. I feel like that's where the central tension is. Would you agree with that, Joe? Is that something that's still, you know, going to be coming into play? Is there going to be a Web 2.0 metaverse that Meta may control? And will there be other versions that are going to be on blockchain and it will be more decentralized? And and also to follow up with that too, it's going to be where the users go. So if it's challenging for users to understand blockchain, will that be a impediment to a more decentralized metaverse?
Yeah, totally. I do agree with you on, especially on the fact that there will be many different planets inside the metaverse, many different solar systems and connections, right? But the real cool part is right now we live in that space too, right? We do live in that space where we go to different websites or we use different apps to get different things done. If you're a gamer, you've 100% are sitting here going like, I've been doing this stuff for 10 years, gang. Like, why aren't we calling it, you know, just kind of gaming of the more gamification of digital life? But the cool point is having these doorways and these roads between those spaces. So yeah, there is going to be totally really cool centric places that we can visit. The same thing is what the opportunity is creating those highways and those places to where I can take my stuff from here and use it in this space, and then take it over here and use it in another space. Right now, I have to have different passwords, different things, different. I can't take the cool things I earned by playing 100 hours of World of Warcraft over to another game and say, cool, right, I'm going to put on my armor here or do my things here. The idea is the hope and the vision is to be able to kind of traverse those spaces with my stuff.
That Web 2.0 version is closed, and that Web 3.0 version will be open, right? That's at least the dream, it seems like. Would you agree with that, Stephanie?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I don't want to get too far down the rabbit hole right now on decentralization versus centralization. But I do think that, you know, going back to that sort of original question of where are consumers, and then what Joe was talking about is like, how do we harness it? That I think consumers are in three camps based on the research and the volume of clients that we work on at Waxman, is that these consumers are either excited and invested, they're totally in the dark, or they're scared because of what you were saying earlier, that cryptocurrency and NFTs are being characterized as risky. I think that is a very simplified way of looking at the technology, and that the technology really offers so many advantages to put organizations very close to the end user through these transactional exchanges. And so I think that what's important for marketers to consider is how typical transactional relationships happen with their customers, and then how can we automate that and give those give the transactions greater utility, foster community, or deliver greater entertainment value. Largely, that goes back to what Joe was talking about within gaming, that, like, for example, if we all understand how subscription services work and loyalty programs, right, this is block and tackle for brand marketers, that those programs can be amplified with blockchain. So, for example, what if when a customer bought a book online and that book was embedded with an NFT? And so through a partnership with whatever streaming service that they're connected to, like Netflix or Disney Plus, for example, then all of a sudden you would be able to unlock additional shows, interviews, content automatically. It's seamless. And then that creates so much more value to the purchase. And we could do this today without blockchain, probably, right? But blockchain offers features in security and asset collection that really helps move this from the conversations that we're having to actual reality. And so I think for those reasons, it's really important to understand where the technology is going in the space.
I think you nailed a big point there, Stephanie, about being entertaining, right? That's such a huge part about this, of wanting to excite people and also being accessible and easy to use. Seems like a huge part of this. You know, I was completely unaware of the NFT space, for example, a couple of years ago, and now I own a Travis Kelce touchdown moment. And so I know that's like a very high level part of it, but it's fun for me, right? So there's so many different applications, whether it's collecting things like that, or art, or there's so many ways to make it easy to use and entertaining for certain niche audiences. And people make so much about how impatient we are as a society, how having quick access to things has made us so impatient, because we don't really have to be patient, right? I mean, I think that making things easy to use, making it accessible and enjoyable is how it can tie back into what we do every day. And that's the biggest part, I think, of that people need to understand is making it enjoyable, and that using things like the metaverse and the blockchain, which makes it easy to use, simple to use, and secure, opens up those doors.
So, you know, I think from the consumer's side, you know, removing friction points is more important today than ever, right? And I think marketers, as they're starting to look at the implications of the metaverse, of NFTs and of crypto, need to think about that. You know, interested to hear, Matt, if you want to continue on that, what are the things that, you know, brands really need to think about as they're considering moving into Web 3.0? What are the, is it only the P&Gs that have experimental budgets and $100 million of advertising spend? What do the mid-market brands need to think about? Because there's ample opportunities and risks as well to getting it right. What are some of the things that you're advising your clients to be thinking about?
Listening to customers, your existing customer base, is really important. And hearing what is really valuable. And we were talking offline, I'd love for Joe to talk a little bit more about this, about even if you are a company that does lots of art, for example, like was it whiskey companies, Joe, you were saying, and how important that space is. If you have a part of your brand that people are excited by, really leaning into that and leveraging it, I think that forcing things is going to make people, that's why people are burnt out already. They see headlines of what we're talking about here, about the metaverse and NFTs, and they think that's not relevant to me. I don't care, because brands are big brands, like you mentioned, Ryan, are jumping at it and things that may not be relevant. But I think there's absolutely some areas that of finding the things that resonate with your current customer base and leaning into that and making that really building loyalty that way. Joe, what was the specific example, like the whiskey art? I think that was just an interesting example of that.
It's a blockchain example for sure, but it's an NFT example. And it's just the idea that there has been such a huge secondary market for whiskeys, for aged whiskeys. And there have been collectors forever, but whenever you collect, there's a big problem of understanding that is the brown liquid inside my bottle actually the whiskey that I spent thousands upon thousands, sometimes $100,000 for. And securing that at your home, I don't want that bottle anywhere near me, right? Like on that idea. And blockchain and NFTs open up this ability for people to broker and safely collect and push these things back and forth. And for the whiskey company, it allows them to make actually another revenue model on a secondary market of collecting that they've never had before. And we can get into that maybe a bit into, that's part of the smart contract, but it's just a way to think about it is art might be the easiest way in, but it is surely connected to everything. Just like social media became and digital, anything became a layer on top of how our businesses work and how we communicate to the consumer.
That's a really interesting point. And there's so many comparisons, I think, to how digital and social had came in from the past too. Certainly would, Hugh, I know you have a pretty good understanding of this. What comparison points have we seen from the past that we could apply to the thinking around to NFTs and crypto in particular?
Yeah, well, bearing that question in mind and just what Joe and everyone else said, when it comes to identifying your users and your customers and how they will find utility in a metaverse or metaverses, I think it goes again back to whether or not whichever metaverse you're operating in is run in a decentralized manner, like on blockchains, or if it's run by a centralized company. Because if we're gonna be incorporating NFTs, maybe doing like decentralized finance, which is basically banking without banks and these networks that are run by code, are you gonna put your NFT in a metaverse that is not controlled by a blockchain, but is controlled by a CEO? The importance of that is if I, take my NFT from one metaverse that's controlled by blockchains, and somehow it's, I can connect it with one that's run by a company, and I put my NFT there and say, we want to like brand the utility of whatever utility is available in that centralized metaverse that I'm shifting my NFT to, I don't have control over that NFT anymore because it's controlled in a centralized system, which means that I am at risk of losing my assets and the value behind those assets. So going back earlier in the discussion about whether or not consumers need to know about how blockchains work, what's the difference between centralization and decentralization, as these metaverse worlds get built out, that's going to be a critical question for companies, consumers, marketers, whatever, to understand, because it will, I think, lead to where people will be comfortable using their crypto assets, whether it's NFTs, tokens, et cetera. And I would probably argue that people who are somewhat savvy in using those assets would stay away from the centralized systems, right? So that probably has implications for branding and marketing, yeah, and all that stuff, along with ethical and political implications.
Well, maybe this is a good time to talk about Kyle's question. And anybody in the audience that wants to use the Q&A function, please ask us any questions there. But what are the, if they were in this decentralized area, what are the, how are the, we can keep companies accountable? How do we prevent, you know, a valuable art NFT being copy and pasted and being sold again on a different metaverse or a different blockchain, right? How do we, that's an argument the centralized people are going to say, money laundering, et cetera, right? You know, what's the, you know, what are the mechanisms of accountability on the blockchain side?
Yeah, why would people trust? Well, I think that's where Kyle's getting to. And Kevin has this too, of like, sounds like huge opportunity for fraud at debt. Absolutely. It absolutely can seem that way, but it really clicked for me to understand why the blockchain is trust, why it equals trust. I think we could back up to that. And Hugh, I'm
sure,
let you roll on that one.
Why should we trust the blockchain? That was a much better, elegant way of me.
It's what I was thinking here. I was like, that's an awesome question. Central to this whole, to learning, I really believe.
Yeah, yeah, it's a great point. And you know, the crypto industry writ large, Web3, whatever you want to call it, is still so early that it's, you know, I think its potential hasn't been fulfilled yet, right? And so there are, as you were saying, I think, A, there's still an issue of how people understand it. There's still a problem of fraud in some cases. But that said, I mean, if you look at Bitcoin, right? Bitcoin is sort of the test. It's sort of the test case for how a Web3, when it's fully built out, is trustless, in that you don't have to trust it because you trust it, right? If that makes sense. Because, you know, Bitcoin, no company controls it. No government controls it. Anyone can mine Bitcoin anywhere in the world. It's never been hacked. No transactions really have fraudulently been made. In addition to that, because it is a public blockchain, every transaction in the history of Bitcoin since the Genesis block, which I think was in 2009, like when some bank in England went down, since the Genesis block, anyone can download all those transactions on their computer and verify the veracity of those transactions. Now, Bitcoin was the first aspect of that technology, right? And it is being developed on by other blockchains that are building more utility onto them. But at the end of the day, ideally, and it is hoped for that in the future, there is, you know, all these transactions combined with the fact that these blockchains are run by communities of people behind computers, that there is an element of credibility. There's an element of confidence in the transactions, and there's an element of transparency, right? And when you combine those three, that yields greater trust in these systems. Now, we're not there yet. I would say we're years away from it, but we're heading there. And those facets of blockchains are exactly the reasons why the crypto people want to at least shift part of the economy away from these traditional centralized structures. I'm not going to bore everyone. I always talk about this within the company. I do, like, you know, kind of background seminars on crypto and Bitcoin. I won't go too deep in everything on that. But the ethos behind all of this stuff, even though we associate it with fraud and illicit transactions, is actually the opposite, right?
Yeah.
Open ledger and we know what and who, in a sense, even if it's anonymously, who we are dealing with. I don't know if that makes sense, but that's kind of how I see it.
Well, I agree with you on the technology side, but I did want to directly address Kyle's question. This isn't to be antagonistic, but is to say that every day we get on airplanes and we trust those airplane brands like Southwest Airlines to get us from one destination to the next, even though if something faulty happens, we plummet to our deaths. And the reason why we do is, dare I say it, is we believe in those brands because we have history. There's legacy there. And I think that where we are in blockchain is we're in the early adoption phase. Laggards to technology are very concerned about all of the use cases where bad actors could come into play. But what Hugh is saying is the technology was created to prevent bad actors. It doesn't mean that bad actors are not involved in the system. And that I would say, though, that if we focus on, you know, what is the future and how can we get there, it's really to think more about who these early adopters are. And the early adopters in crypto and in tech now are typically male or higher income. They're 18 to 34 year old male. They are over-indexing for 100,000 plus in income, over-indexing for urban geographies. Mm-hmm. And the interesting part about that is that that's why quick service restaurants like KFC are getting involved, or Pizza Hut. That's why beverage, wine and spirits are getting involved, because it makes sense for their target audience. And I think that's really important, that it may not be a fit for your target audience right now. However, like, for example, if your target audience is head of household, female, 30 plus, probably not the right target. However, like Reese Witherspoon, World of Women, these NFT projects that are very specific to women, they're, and some other power female influencers are really doing a lot of work right now to try to capture different segments. And then I think that—
You're doing the branding work for the whole experience, right? In a lot of ways, with your Southwest example.
Oh, sure.
They're the ones that are going to, you know, kind of move that innovation curve from those earlier adopters to eventually to the laggards, right? But that's a lot of work, a lot of branding work.
It is a lot of work. And think about social media. So that back in 2009, people were totally lost. I started teaching Facebook classes in about 2009, 2010. And, you know, people just didn't understand the technology. It was very foreign. They didn't understand what a newsfeed was. They didn't understand what a feed or endless scroll was at all. Like, that was very new technology. and so I think that it isn't to say that there are, like I said, that there aren't bad actors. It is to say that new technology can really be helpful and that we want to harness it for good whenever possible, right? And that I think that there are some ways that we can consider how centralized organizations and decentralization can partner, and that maybe it doesn't have to be one or the other, and that there are benefits and pluses and minuses to both of those systems. I think that what we're seeing, and I just sent some information to Matt this morning about crypto adoption worldwide. The US is not the number one country for crypto adoption. Other countries like India, Pakistan, the Ukraine, these countries have greater crypto adoption than we do, in large part because of market volatility, inflation, and that they're—
They also have a lot less trust of the centralized government.
Exactly.
Right?
And so that goes back to what I was saying about centralization and decentralization. And so I would say that, just to put a data point in mind, because I just sent this to Matt this morning, is that we have grown worldwide 881% in 2021 for crypto adoption. So, and it's growing, and investment in venture capital funds in blockchain is through the roof. And so it's less about being scared about your wallet and being more open to thinking, how can I harness the power of transactions to give my customers greater utility, to give my customers greater sense of community, greater entertainment value, feel closer to the ability to do something and be involved in relation, yeah, in transactional relationship.
I want to go into a slightly different direction and answer one of the questions that was posted. You know, just today at the ANA conference, the CMO of Verizon came up and said, I don't want Verizon's introduction into the metaverse to just be a sign on a wall in a Oculus VR headset, right? They want to have something that's a lot more interactive, that has value exchange, et cetera. So what current methods of marketing exist in the metaverse that actually do provide that value? Is there something there that advertisers should be looking at almost from like a placement level, the same way that we look at print and billboard? What's there today from like a media perspective that you could, you know, quote unquote, buy? Does anybody have, I'll leave this to the panel at large. Where can advertisers place ads in the, or should they even be thinking about it as in that campaign lens? Maybe that's a Web 1.0 way of thinking about it in some ways, right? Should they be thinking about commercials? Should they be thinking about campaigns when you're looking at interacting in Web 3.0, or should they be thinking about fundamentally differently?
What they should be, what they should be thinking about is probably not the tactics. If I were anyone out there, it would not be what is my necessarily metaverse plan or my crypto plan. It's, hey, how about we take the lines and separation out of our digital marketing group, our digital groups, and our physical groups? You should be trying to connect as much as possible, the understanding that humans don't live this binary way of an existence between their digital and their physical lives. You need to really, if I were exploring, it wouldn't be as much about exploring those different kinds of tactics or advertisements we could use there, and we can talk about that. But really, I would love to really push that you should be working beyond marketing. It should be really on thinking about your experience in general and how that experience flows from somebody's digital life to their physical life and back and forth in that area. It's easy to chase the sparkly stuff. And it really is. And we can, and there's AR ads on every large social network with hundreds of millions of users. And we can go through that. But really what you need to do is the plumbing. And I know it's not the fun stuff, but it is going to be core and central to being able to be metaverse ready or Web3 ready.
I also fundamentally believe in traditional advertising, right? Like I believe in it. I haven't seen anything to suggest that we shouldn't believe in it. however, in reference to what Joe was saying in terms of like experimentation and, you know, looking into the inner workings of this, let's think deeper, right? Like, are ads offering more value? Are they offering more relationship value and entertainment value to the customers? If they're not, segment out an innovation budget if you've got the right target audience for blockchain, for metaverse NFTs, and think about, you know, how to turn your ad into an NFT, how to give it more value to the end user. Because I think in large part, that to me goes back to the transaction issue. Really consider how transactions work for your organization, whether it's in advertising or it's an actual purchase, and then continue to drive greater value and whatever that value means to your user. But I don't think that traditional advertising is going away. I just think that there's a really big opportunity to rethink how advertising works. And then there's also some interesting things that are going on with just professional services that, you know, I've seen articles and I've seen some different companies that are trying to get into decentralized exchanges for advertising. I think that's interesting. I don't think we're there yet, if that makes sense, but just be open to the opportunities.
Right. I mean, be where your audience is, right? So if your audience is still using print ads, then stay in print, right? But we have seen, and I know Stephanie, we've worked together in doing audience research and using our audience insights tools, various partners that we have, that more and more there's interest in these spaces, in these emerging spaces. So it's just being ready for that rather than being one step behind, right? So I think that's a great suggestion about innovation budget. Doesn't have to be all of it. That's not what we're saying, right? But by diversifying and just follow where your customers are.
Yeah, just a quick thought on that. I think, you know, the question also might be whether you are able to advertise in these metaverses, because it depends on the revenue and incentive structures of how they're built, right? Again, if you're, maybe Spotify has one, right? And the level of engagement and utility a user wants, maybe, you know, if there's a subscription, you know, for engaging in the metaverse, and if you opt for the free version, then you are exposed to the ads in that metaverse. But if you pay a subscription for participating in it, then maybe you get fewer ads, right? Who knows, right? But again, if there's a, so that's one model, but maybe, you know, the incentive structure of a metaverse, again, say like run a blockchain, the revenue would come from the transactions made processing the data on that metaverse through blockchain transactions. So, and I would imagine in such a decentralized metaverse, an advertising model would be harder to implement because there's already, you know, a blockchain-based financing system. So these are kind of interesting questions to think about, like can you actually add in the, you know, advertise in the metaverse, right? Maybe not, you know, it's
and if you are able to advertise, is it addressable, right? Is there going to be connection with CTV and what you've purchased from retail and measurement, et cetera, right? I don't think I'm going to go on a limb and think we're not going to be able to answer specifically that question. But I do think, as you know, marketers are looking at different ways to have addressable content that does give a value proposition, that this would be an opportunity for, as you're building a new ecosystem, to be able to be both respectful of individuals' privacy while still being able to you know, give a value proposition to a user that maybe we haven't seen with Web 2.0, right? And maybe that's where some of the mistrust comes from a little bit as well. Web 2.0 did mine a lot of data. It did, definitely wasn't decentralized. That was, you know, really caught in a couple of walled gardens there. I think from the marketer's perspective, Kyle's question is an interesting one. How do we go about measuring success, and how do we think about addressability and scale? Does anybody want to take that one?
I mean, and I think this is great. It's a really, like we said before, it's a wide conversation, right? And to me, what it is going to be is fascinating for sure. But if you're a marketer and you're tuning into this and you want to know right now those spaces that we can get into, I mean, look at, just understand how important identity is on a digital life versus a physical life. Of course, people want identity inside of the time they spend inside digital realms. Take gaming right now. Fortnite makes over $1 billion on just goods that you can only wear in Fortnite, like outfits for their avatar, as well as dances that identify them, and they spend tons of cash on it, and it gives them no bonuses inside the game. Only gives them a meritocracy. It gives them like some kind of, hey, I've been here, I've done this. It gives me identity, just like a luxury bag does, or just like a car does inside that. So if you're a marketer and you're thinking about how do I go at this, it's maybe not necessarily how, it's more about where can I add value? Where can I tap into that person and support their identity? Where can I be part of that experience or create value inside that experience? Not so much how can I put my logo all over that experience? That's gonna happen. We love putting our logos all over places, but how can I tap into that?
We feel like we're doing our job when the logo is placed in places.
Yeah, I mean, like that's just, it's going to always be part of it, and that's totally fine. And yes, 100%, if there is 3D space, you're gonna have billboards inside of that metaverse, and Meta, Oculus already is experimenting with that right now. But I would say really those places you should be looking are what kind of marketing right now are things like NFT communities and projects doing, and then look inside of what gaming has been doing for the last 20 years. That marketers, we haven't been as close to, even though there's been a ton of attention there, we haven't been as close to because it's been
the gaming playbook is certainly something I think broader marketers may want to start looking into because like you said, they've been doing that for a long time. And that isn't just marketing within video games themselves, certainly, right? You know, crypto.com is, you know, on the LA Lakers stadium at this point, right? So there is a blend of real of the physical world and digital, I think that brands are gonna have to look at. I'll go to Amy's question next. What are some of your favorite trusted resources besides everybody on this panel and following them on social who have written a lot of great content and are thought leaders in the space? What other things are you guys following to keep abreast of everything that's going on in a very quickly changing universe here?
You've got to take this one.
I don't know. Please, I defer to the rest of the panel. Go ahead.
Because I know that, I mean, it's part of Hugh's job is to stay up to date on trends and resources. And
yeah, Hugh, it's your job. Tell us what.
Let's you do your start, job Hugh. You. Give Amy a kernel.
Okay. No, look, I mean, for my work, I read like the crypto trades, like CoinDesk, Cointelegraph, but the most valuable information that I get and the easiest way for me to absorb it is after work, I go on walks and I listen to podcasts. And I listen to basically crypto podcasts, but not like necessarily crypto investing, but just like where the intersection of the technology and the politics and the societal aspects of it are sort of converging, right? So podcasts like Bankless, What Bitcoin Did, there's a guy named Pomp, people listen to The Wolf of All Streets, not to be confused with The Wolf of Wall Street, but The Wolf of All Streets. Hidden Forces, Lex Fridman, Laura Shin's podcast, Unchained, is wonderful. But what I like about these crypto podcasts is that they're not trying to shill you something. It's more like, hey, you know, Facebook wants to integrate Oculus, and can they do that on Ethereum, right? What does this mean for fraud, right? What does this mean for democracy and governance? And through listening to that, just because I'm sort of obsessed with it, I've been doing that for like 5 years, you know, you just build a body of knowledge, which is the best way to do it without getting too bored. Because in my opinion, reading books on this stuff, I just pass out, you know, I'm just like, oh, you know, so that's me. So.
Well, technology changes.
I'll say we'll send some of your favorites to the group in attendance after this. Stephanie, go ahead.
I was going to say the technology changes so quickly that then the books become obsolete, but I mean, I really rely on Hugh and other colleagues at Waxman who share links, who are sharing articles, podcast episodes every day. But I also like to really look at the traditional trades because, you know, reading the New York Times or even Ad Age, which a colleague at Waxman said, it's a rolling list of brands that are experimenting in NFTs and they're updating it on a regular basis. I check that list. But I like to see what people outside of the industry are talking about and how they're thinking, because that's a bigger audience. And I like to see sort of what's on the horizon and also to consider what the detractors are. Personally, I've worked in technology that is very, very political, like GMOs, which I'm sure a lot of people in this audience, if they're from St. Louis, have worked in GMO tech. And there was a very negative reputation around that, which has in large part absorbed some of that and is still continuing. There's not as much negativity anymore in large part because it's not as new of a technology. But I think that, you know, in terms of Amy's question about resources that you should be looking at, I think that there are just traditional, like just looking at traditional sources is great. And then also research think tanks, Morning Consult, Chainalysis, they do regular research on cryptocurrency. The University of Chicago has some great research that they're putting out around demographics and the audience. I think that that data is really important because it's very easy, especially when you're inside crypto, to make assumptions about who is investing and why. I also am participating with our marketing team and doing just one-on-one qualitative interviews of people who are invested in different areas, and that has been absolutely enlightening. And so I think that there's traditional ways of getting research, and those traditional ways are still valid. The places that I mentioned, there's great research there if you're interested.
Pat, you're sitting on a ton of data from our research stack at Kolegi. What things are you looking at besides the tools that are available to you at a subscription cost? What other things could we suggest to the audience there?
So I can't say Forrester. It's one of them. But I think Hugh nailed a few ones just from an everyday standpoint. Keeping on top of Cointelegraph is my day-to-day to understand. I also have the benefit of working with people like Stephanie and her team at Waxman. So that's been very educational for me. I find a lot of information. You have to have a filter ready, but just via Reddit, I find that's a lot of really great information and discourse there. You have to, you know, be able to weigh what's true and what's not sometimes there. But that's a lot of where my information comes from. So just outside of our research stack, that's typically where I go from a day-to-day basis.
And Joe, I know you're, as a consultant, get asked a lot to weigh in on opinions. Is there anything that you want to add to the long list of potential places for people to start really looking at understanding this?
I was taking notes. And I will have a metaverse themed podcast coming out soon. And I should have had it before now. It would have been kind of the perfect spot for it. Here's a few places. Just you learn by doing. You learn by doing. Not until I had a very different mindset about all of what's going on right now until I got in and I started learning by doing and connecting and got a wallet up and running and then made my first transactions. Followed my first NFT project from the very first of the whitelist and watching the community build and watching the marketing take place within that. There is zero better place to go than just getting your hands in yourself, even the smallest. It's very similar. It's always been that way with social media too. It's very hard to talk about how you marketing, do really great work inside of TikTok whenever you don't utilize Kick. You never utilized it before. So you really have to find and carve out that time, which I know is tough, but to be able to find that part of all of this, it's really captivating to you. That really is fun for you, and start there. Finding out communities to follow inside of Discord and understanding the idea of Discord is very helpful. Reddit has been mentioned. If you want to start reading on metaverse stuff, Matthew Ball is a technologist who's an incredible, has a lot of writings about kind of what the metaverse is built of and what's the plumbing behind that as well. There's a ton of different places to go. YouTube. It can be rough, but there is definitely
you can find the gold nuggets.
There is definitely you start finding those people. Twitter has become reemerged, and really these places that are very social 2.0 are these places to really start and dig into to get started. But just get started yourself. Find a place that you like.
Yeah, and like me, you may feel behind. Or slow initially, because you mentioned Discord. The first time I started joining that, I immediately said, I have no idea what these people are talking about. But as it starts growing and you start to get more familiar, it's shocking how quickly you pick up on the verbiage of the community and what matters. And if you're interested in it, it's a lot easier, right? So I think that's an important part of it. Find the things you're interested in. And Discord, I wanted to call that out again, Joe. That was a huge one for me.
Lisa Richardson has a real vision that she suggested in the chat. Thank you for that. About 5 minutes, and I'll go to Kevin's question here. I noticed that there was this company called Facebook that changed their name to Meta around the metaverse. I don't know if you've heard of them. Why is that company obsessed with the metaverse? I thought it was at the moment that they decided to do that, they had so much negative press that it was almost a PR play just to distract from everything that was happening with Congress and negative news. But they didn't do that just as a distraction technique. They obviously are going to see advertising dollars potential in the future, even if they don't have it completely figured out. Why is Facebook, a 2.0 company, decided to put a stake directly at changing their name to a 3.0 version?
Their product offering and brand is so rooted in community and engagement and interaction, and that's probably the answer that they're going to give you. And I think it's really true. I mean, that's how they built it into the advertising empire that it is, right? It started as something that was meant on building community. And if I'd answer that question, I think that's likely where that motivation comes from. Absolutely, it's revenue, ad revenue tied, right? That's the goal. But they're going where they think people eventually will be, and they want to create the infrastructure to speed that process up. So it's obviously, I think, rooted in that ad revenue that you mentioned, but I think there is an interesting community there.
And Facebook has historically doubled down and invested in, you know, infrastructure, internet infrastructure, largely mobile adoption and internet service in the far corners of the world. I think we can, Facebook definitely played a role in that. They have such a large user base that, you know, Matt was describing. I mean, I don't work for Facebook, guys, but if it was me, they have an email address or a user ID for practically everybody on the planet. They could be giving everyone a wallet. Boom. Now you have a place to collect your digital assets. Now it wouldn't function like a traditional wallet in terms of connected to like currency and banking, but you would automatically be able to have a storage or a holder for things. I think there's a lot of ways that they can utilize the community aspect that Matt was talking about to give, you know, greater value to the user base. I think that largely the problem for Facebook, though, is that people are, again, afraid for all the obvious reasons and all of the reasons that we know that we've read about. But I think that it should be interesting to see where they go with that, because they have so much knowledge of their user base, and they also have access to so many email addresses.
They have more reach than any other company in the world, besides maybe Google, pretty close. Joe or Hugh, do you have any last comments here? We've got 2 minutes left. Anything on the wrap a bow on this ongoing discussion that I'm sure we'll continue to have in future webinars as well?
Just real quick, but yeah, like from a logistical level, I think Facebook's user base kind of stopped growing, right, from its traditional model. And therefore, they're, you know, in terms of Metcalfe's law and the increased demand, it sort of hit a wall. But when you step back and look what I think Zuckerberg is, you know, barring all the political issues around Facebook, Zuckerberg is a very smart, savvy man. And the metaverse, you know, is the next frontier, right? The last place in the world to be physically settled was basically like the American West, you know, with all the horrible things that happened with that, but that was the last frontier. So this is like the digital frontier, right? And to be able to build that and then populate it in a way to your liking and in a way that benefits your company is just a huge opportunity.
I feel a little like Westworld, maybe more than the last frontier, potentially with the digital. Joe, any final thoughts?
I'm so pumped to be able to talk to everybody here today. On this, I think this, it is, if you think of it as the internet, there's lots of good and lots of bad. And I'm not a proponent of saying, waving my flag and saying that, hey, we should be spending all of our time, inside virtual, places at all. Let's go towards the places that really are going to benefit the user and really going to benefit the customer and look of where they're paying attention to. And the only way you're going to be able to have anything to say about it and do about it is by getting in and learning about it and taking part in it. So I see a lot of the same conversations happening that were, hey, it was just for kids whenever it was social media, and we're good. We're cool with this digital, with having mobile app. We're good with having all these things. It's just the same thing. And I see it now again. It's like, nah, it's not going to happen. Oh, it's happening. And in the thing you can do is, it is uncomfortable, always at first. And I had said this too, it's uncomfortable. Any human is that way, but we adapt quickly. So find your way in and really start learning about it. So you don't be that person 10 years later that's like, oh golly, now I'm spending hundreds of millions of dollars to catch up to everybody, just like I did in Web 2.0 and Web 1.0. So hang on.
Well, everybody's going to have a wallet and an Oculus headset the next time that we meet on this topic. Thank you guys so much. We'll send some follow-ups afterwards on some of the content that we talked about. I know each of our companies will have a lot more to say in our marketing about this over the rest of the year. So thank you guys so much. Thanks for everybody for attending, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you for listening. Kwegi is an industry-leading performance marketing agency based in the Midwest. We've learned a lot since our founding in 2014 and started the Loop Marketing Podcast to share some of our hot takes on marketing trends we're following, best practices we've discovered, and actionable tips for improving your digital strategy. We'll see you next time.